Good morning. Welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580. My name is Inge. I'm glad to have you with us this morning. The producers for our show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Refrain is at the controls. There are tens of thousands of Americans that are now on the National Organ Transplant waiting list. And a disproportionate number of these folks who are waiting for available organs are minorities. Yet, minority donors account for, well, according to figures that I've seen, only about a quarter, about 25% of the available donor pool. In this part of our show, we'll be talking about how communication between doctors and patients can be improved, both to improve their quality of care and to increase awareness of the need for organ donation, and how these things particularly play out in communities of color. Our guest for the program is Dr. Juan Carlos Caicedo. He is a solid organ transplant surgeon. He is also director of the Hispanic Transplant Program at Northwestern Memorial Hospital. He is also assistant professor of surgery in the Division of Organ Transplantation at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. And he is here visiting in Champaign-Urbana. He'll be giving a talk, by the way, on the subject of organ donation and transplantation in communities of color. This takes place at the Pollard Auditorium at the Carl Forum in Urbana tonight at 6 o'clock, and I believe that anyone who would be interested in attending the talk should feel welcome to stop by. And as we talk here this morning, questions certainly are welcome, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that was good anywhere that you can hear us, so if you'd be listening around Illinois and Indiana, and it would be a long-distance call, use that, or actually anywhere in the country, if you're listening on the internet, you can use that number, too. That's 800-222-9455. Well, thank you very much for being here. We certainly appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, David, to be here with you.
How many, let's just talk a little bit about the numbers. How many people in the United States, how many Americans are now waiting for an available organ?
In this moment, according with UNOS, that compile all the information from all U.S., there is more than 100,000 people, exactly, it's 105,000 people waiting for organs. Then what organs people are waiting, basically? Mm-hmm. Then the bigger number is waiting for kidney, followed by liver, pancreas, kidney pancreas, small bowel. That is in the abdomen. And, of course, we can transplant heart and lungs. Then basically the biggest group is a kidney and liver.
Mm-hmm. As over we're talking about, that's even more than, I think the figures that I saw were something over 80,000. So no doubt they were maybe several years out of date. So we've got over 100,000 people.
Right. Every year is growing so fast. And unfortunately, it's growing faster than the amount or number of potential donors.
Yeah, so obviously there are people who, literally there are people who die, and they're still waiting because there aren't enough organs.
Absolutely. That is one of the biggest problems. Then the biggest problem in organ transplantation these days is that there is not enough organs to transplant. And then that's why people are dying. Yeah. Then I would like to remember that when we're talking about organ transplantation, there's two sources of organs for transplantation. One are the deceased donors, mm-hmm. and the other are the living donors. Then let me remember that, for example, we're doing kidney transplant from both, from deceased donors and from living donors. We're doing liver transplant, again, for deceased donors and also from living donors. We have only one liver, but actually we can divide the liver. And if we have a pediatric patient, we can take a little piece of that liver and transplant the small kid. Or if we have an adult recipient or patient, we can take a bigger piece of liver from a living donor and transplant that patient. As well, it has been done for pancreas, has been done for small bowel. And then there's a lot of living donor potential to grow. And maybe we can discuss more about that, the specific topics in every organ.
Sure. To talk specifically about the need for organs in minority community, we're talking here about African Americans, Latinos. Mm-hmm. How does their need compare with, say, with other ethnic groups, other ethnic communities?
Right, it's a very important question. Why? Basically, we know in U.S., according to the U.S. Census Bureau, there is more than 303 million people in U.S. in this moment. Mm-hmm. If we analyze, 74% of them are Caucasians or white, and 26% are minorities. In this moment, the largest minority are the Hispanic community, followed by the African-American community. And then, now we're saying 1/4 of the population are minorities. But when we analyze the number of patients on the waiting list, actually now it's opposite. The minorities are the majorities mm-hmm. waiting for organs. Mm-hmm. But what is interesting is the minorities are not receiving the transplant in the same proportion. I don't know if I make myself clear. Then, when we're talking about patients waiting for organs uh-huh. in order to get the transplant, the minorities are the biggest group. It's close to 50% of the patients on the waiting list are minorities. And especially in kidneys, is a bigger number, in proportionally speaking. But then, when we analyze what patients are getting the transplant, instead of having the same proportion, the minorities are receiving less transplants. Mm-hmm. And one of the problems also is the minorities in general, they donate less organs, unfortunately. I'm talking about, again, from deceased donors and from living donors. And then it's something that we need to work very hard. And I think the main problem is lack of good information. Sometimes people has information, but that information is wrong most of the time or is not correct mm-hmm. totally.
So there's two things that are important. One is that it seems that within the minority community, there the incidence of health problems that would put you into a place where you would need to replace an organ is greater.
Absolutely. Then let me give some examples.
Sure.
Then in the Hispanic community, there is to develop diabetes, hypertension, obesity, hepatitis C, hepatitis B, and NASH, that is non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, is higher compared with white Caucasian patients. And in African Americans, too, they have higher risk of hypertension and diabetes. And both are leading causes of cardiovascular disease and mm-hmm. also renal disease. Then in both communities, for example, they have more of this disease that at the end are going to damage the organs and they are going to need more transplant. In this case, more kidneys or more livers. The diabetes and hypertension damage the kidney. Now, the obesity, that is a very prevalent problem in the U.S., 60% or close to 70% of the Americans are overweight or obese. The obesity is going to affect all the body, including the liver, mm-hmm. you know, and then the obesity is a risk factor to develop the NASH that I mentioned before, the non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, and that can produce cirrhosis at some point. And then if the patient develops cirrhosis with complication, is going to need a transplant. In these days, hepatitis C is the leading cause of cirrhosis that is going to require a liver transplant. But I'm thinking that in the future, probably the obesity with NASH is going to be the leading cause of cirrhosis in many of our patients, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. So certainly the need is there. And this brings us back to the issue of donation. That is of, say, within the Latino community, people who are interested and willing even think about organ donation. And this gets to an issue, and it may be something that people aren't aware of, that in as much as recently it seems that medical science, what they're saying to us is that people are people. And it does, and racial and ethnic background doesn't really make very much difference, that we're all the same. Well, the fact is when it comes to organ transplantation, that in you correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is that you have a better chance of the person who is getting the organ of accepting that and having that be successful if it's someone that comes from their same ethnic group.
Actually, I would say this in a different way. I don't think in this moment there's no, if we're transplanting organ from the same species, I mean, if it's from another human being, doesn't matter your religious, doesn't matter your color, doesn't matter your age. Of course, we need to match some factors, but in general, for the public, I would say, doesn't matter. You can be African-American, receive a kidney from a white, or be a Hispanic and receive from African-American, you know, and there is no issues with that. Of course, depending on the ethnic background or the race, there's some immune factors that can play a role. But in general, as a concept, we transplant without distinction. And actually, when, for example, we are allocating the organs from deceased donors, in the allocation algorithm, we don't have the race as a parameter. So it's not like we don't know. I mean, if it's it's a good organ, it doesn't matter. And actually, I can tell you, inside of the body, there's no color, you know. If you are African-American, all your organs inside look the same. As a white, as a Hispanic, as a Native American, there's no difference.
So I get, well, maybe I misunderstood some of the things that I was reading. It made it look like there might be some reason why you would get a better kind of a match that way. So then going back to what we were talking about before, then it's just your interest in maybe having more Latinos as organ donors. It's just that you need organs. The demand is way more than the supply. And
right.
What you'd like to do, I'm sure you'd like to get everybody who could to be an organ donor.
Right, absolutely. I mean, the idea is to increase the donation rate through all the ethnic groups and races. It's not only for Latinos. But on the other hand, I want to emphasize that African Americans and Latinos are suffering more of this kind of disease that are going to damage the organ. They're going to need more transplant. And actually, these communities don't donate in the same, I mean, they should donate more than they are doing now. And I think basically the problem is lack of good information.
Let me introduce again the guest for this part of Focus 580, Dr. Juan Carlos Caicedo. He's a solid organ transplant surgeon. He is director of the Hispanic Transplant Program at Northwestern Memorial Hospital. Also, he is assistant professor of surgery in the Division of Organ Transplantation at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. And he's here visiting in Champaign-Urbana to talk about this particular issue, that is organ donation and transplantation in communities of color. And we'll be one of the speakers at a program dealing with this issue that's tonight at the Pollard Auditorium at the Carl Forum on West Park in Urbana. That's tonight at 6 o'clock, and I think that anybody who's interested should stop by. Otherwise, here, questions are welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, if the issue here is that particularly, say, in the Latino and African-American communities, you don't have people donating their organs and at the level that you would really hope, simply because you need a lot of organs. There are more people in need than there are available. And if this is a matter of education, that is, maybe people haven't gotten the message or something about the way the message is delivered.
Right.
How would you think that could be made better?
Right. Then I think we need to address this in a multifactorial or multi-level way. What I imply with this? First of all, we need to recognize the different cultures of our people. Then, for example, for Hispanics and, well, all the ethnic groups, there is different beliefs. And then the religion is very important. And sometimes people doesn't realize, or maybe they don't know, that most of the religions in the world, they are in favor or they are supported about the organ donation and transplantation. In Hispanic, specifically speaking, we are very, the community is a strong believer in Christ and the Catholicism, and actually the Catholic Church is in favor or is supported about the organ donation transplantation. Actually, John Paul II was one the only Pope that has been in a scientific meeting, and actually was in a transplant meeting in Rome. And he, of course, addressed some talk there, and he mentioned some concept that I think is very important, and people need to know this. He said that the biggest act of love, the love that anybody can do is donate an organ. Because you can have money, you can have some physical, you know, things, but you have it today, tomorrow you can lose it easy. But your body is the only thing that you really have in your life. That is your things, you know. And if you give up something for somebody else that you love or that you appreciate, there's something big. You know, and then that's why John Paul II was saying that is the biggest act of love that somebody can do for somebody else. And it's great. And then if people start learning that, they will change their mind sometimes. And that is the one level, you know, the religious level. And it's important. And the other level is the scientific level, that they need to learn about what implied deceased donor, what is a brain dead. Sometimes the medical community is not fully aware what means brain dead. Sometimes people doesn't realize that there is a fine line, and I mean, it's a very defined line between being dead or brain dead and alive. You know, we cannot take organs from alive people. I mean, in the disease protocol, if we're doing a living donor, it's a different story. You know, the donor is going to be good after the donation. That is the idea. But when we're talking about disease donors, we need to make sure that that everything is done in the right way. And every center in the country and around the world, they're doing a good job. The transplant cannot be done in any small room in any house. This needs a big infrastructure, a very well-trained people, and usually it's in a big centers. Then sometimes people think that that can be done anywhere, and that is not true, you know. And people listen or read some magazine that probably I will question the origin of the magazine, saying, oh, yeah, beautiful woman take a man in a motel and they remove two organs or something like that. Yeah. It's unbelievable. And people listen to that and they believe that. Then I think that is far away of the reality. And actually that makes more harm than good. And actually for that, a lot of people are dying. As we said, there's more than 100,000 people waiting for organs. And unfortunately per year, there's no more than 10,000 of donors across the country. Then we're having 90,000 people that are not getting the organs, they are not getting transplanted, and they're dying. Then that's a bigger problem.
Let's talk with someone here who is calling in, someone in Urbana on our line number one.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes. I'm almost 80 years old. I'm 79, and I've been signed up in other places that I live to be an organ donor. But I don't know if they want organs from someone as old as I am.
Well, let me answer that. It's very interesting. Then it's important to think that we can donate not only organs, but also tissues. Then what organs we can donate, again, is heart, lungs, liver, kidney, pancreas, small bowel. But talking about tissues, we have corneas, ligaments, bones, valves, cardiac valves, or vessels that can be used. And then we can add one of the most interesting organs in the body is the liver. Maybe I have my bias because I am also a liver surgeon, but the liver has the property or the characteristic that can regenerate. Somebody has mentioned that the liver can last 400 years. And as a human being, we don't last 400 years, but the liver can do it. Then, for example, talking specifically about liver, we can procure livers from an 80 years old person. And if the person is healthy and there is no other problems associated, probably the liver is going to be just great.
Oh, well, that's good to know, because I've been signed up in other places that I've lived. But I've recently, well, in the last couple of years, I've moved from way out east here to Urbana. And is there something I need to do to get on the list for to be a donor, to have my body used?
Yeah, basically, there is two things that are so important. First of all, is to mention to your family, to your friends, to your relatives, that you are willing to do it.
Okay.
Because in that situation, when something happened, there is a very, very difficult situation for your friends or your family. But if they know that that was your will, they're going to do it without problem. It's going to facilitate the problem.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that last sentence.
Then, if you express your will to your family,
yes.
If something happened, for them it's going to be easier to take the decision. They will say, okay, she wants to do it, and then we're going to respect her or his will.
Yes. All right. All right. I don't expect to live forever. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and all of us.
So I want this done.
Uh-huh.
But I want my family here. I have a daughter here to know how to cope with this and what to do.
Right.
And what should she know? And what information should she have?
Mm-hmm.
At her fingertips, so to speak, so that it can be done right away.
Right. Then the other thing is many people, when they get the driver license, they can sign behind the donor kind of consent in some fashion, and then that also help. But I think the most important is make aware the family about your wishes. All of us, we want to live a long period of time. We can live for forever, but we want to live, we want to have a long life. But I think it's great to think in somebody else. If something happened to us, we don't want that. But if something happened to us, we can give a lot of life to another people.
Yes, I've already made that decision a long time ago, and I lived out east, and I think I was signed up okay out there. But I moved here recently, and I want to know if there's something I should do to get on the list to be the donor here.
Right. Then in our organ bank in our region is called Give a Hope.
Then what is it? Give us hope?
Give of Hope.
Okay.
Then the website is the same, www.giveofhope.org. Then you can find information there. They have some very useful information for you. You can read it, and you can have your name also with them and everything. And this should be done for every single person. And as I was mentioned, not only the liver, but also all the tissues, usually there is no much problem regarding the age.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good.
Right.
I'm pretty healthy.
Good. So we don't want anything bad happen to you and anybody.
Right.
But it's so, I mean, you never know what is going to happen in the future.
Well, that's right. And I want to be signed up. So I can have my daughter, who actually is a nurse, try to communicate with this Give Us Hope. She can probably do that online.
Okay. In fact, I'm listening. I'm looking at the website right now, and it's a Gift of Hope. So it's www.giftofhope. That's all as one word. .org.
Okay. www.giftofhope. All one word.
All one word. Gift of Hope.
Okay.
.org.
Org.
And if you go there, in right on the front page here, there's a place where you can register to be a donor.
Great. That's what information that I needed. Thank you very much.
Sure thing. Well, thank you. And again, here it has some of the kind of information that we're talking about here in terms of numbers. And according to this website, there are now more than 4,700 people waiting for organs in Illinois, more than 900 in Indiana. Every 13 minutes, somebody new is added to the national waiting list. And it says here also an average of 18 people die every day while waiting. So this is a good, if you've ever thought about this and you haven't done it, maybe you've said to yourself, yes, one of these days I'm going to sign up. This would be a good way to do it. You can go to the Gift of Hope website. You can register to be a donor. And then also that is something here in the state of Illinois where they're trying to when people get new driver's licenses, that's also a way they try to encourage people to think about that. And there is, in fact, a thing that you can sign and stick onto your driver's license. So if there's any doubt. But I'm sure that also what you say is true, that if you do that, that it's really important that you talk about this with your family so they know this was what you want, so that there'll be no doubt in their minds. If you're not able to, not in a position to say what you want, then somebody else in your family will know. They'd say, well, oh, yes, we talked about this, and this is what they would like to have happen. Questions otherwise, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Our guest, by the way, Dr. Juan Carlos Caicedo, he is a solid organ transplant surgeon. He's director of the Hispanic Transplant Program at Northwestern Memorial Hospital. He's also an assistant professor of surgery in the Division of Organ Transplantation at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. Talk about the Hispanic Transplant Program and what the idea behind that is.
Basically is we recognize that our Hispanic community is growing. I mean, now is the largest minority. Mm-hmm. And we are growing 58% in the period between 1990 and 2000. And we're growing 58% compared with 13% of the rest of the population. Now, we're growing so fast, and we're having more disease that are going to end it with many organs failure that is going to require transplantation. Then when we're talking about specific medical issues, or when we're talking with some patient about very important issues, they prefer to listen everything in Spanish if they're, mm-hmm. that is their native language. I would define I'm Hispanic, and I define ourselves like deers. When we don't understand something, we just run away. We don't wait until the tiger catch up. Then we realize that unfortunately there's a lot of barriers for this community to get the health care. And one of them is the language. Mm-hmm. That basically we develop a comprehensive program in our university. And actually I work as a transplant surgeon, not only in Northwestern Memorial Hospital, but also as a pediatric transplant surgeon in Children's Memorial Hospital. Mm-hmm. Then basically in Northwestern Memorial Hospital, what we did is we bring to our team a lot of Hispanic people, or at least bilingual people. Then we have transplant coordinators for kidney, pancreas, liver, small bowel. They speak Spanish. We have surgeons, Dr. Michael Lacasis, who is the chief of our division in Northwestern. He speaks Spanish, and myself as a surgeon. We have nephrologists. We have three hepatologists that are from Mexico and Argentina, and they speak, of course, Spanish. We have social workers. We have financial coordinators. We have researchers, coordinators, that all of them speak Spanish. In that way, we help them to understand better. They feel more comfortable. And actually, all our clinics are in Spanish. And all the material that we're giving to them are translated to Spanish. In that way, we're trying to make sure that they understand. And you know, when you're talking with people, you need to realize also what is the educational level and make sure that they understand what you're saying. But no, also the educational level is the language. What is the native language? And then if we're talking about that they are dying, there's some option to give another better option of life, and usually when they understand that, they move forward, and the outcomes are better. And for example, the living donation program, or the living donor program in Hispanics, prior to our Hispanic transplant program, the donation rate was very low, 20-30%. And doesn't make sense in Hispanics because we have bigger families. We have huge families. Usually we have 3, 4, 5. I have patients with 10 kids, you know. And then One of them could be a potential living donor. But in the past, for lack of information, they are not moving forward. Then as soon as we start explaining everything in Spanish and having all the team talking in Spanish, one thing is use a translator or a phone line to try to translate. That is not the same. And that doesn't make you feel good. You are very concerned. I'm not understanding 100% what they're saying. And that produces a lot of fear. Then as soon as we start with the program, with all the people talking in Spanish, everything translated in Spanish, and all the clinics in Spanish, our potential donation rate increased from 30% to more than 80%. Basically, it's just educating and transmitting the message in the native language. Mm. And another thing that we're doing is we're bringing all the family. I don't care only about the patient. I care about the family. Why? If I bring the grandmother, the grandfather, or all the friends, actually the gossiper in the neighborhood, with the Hispanic, we talk a lot, you know. And then we invite everybody to our clinics, our talks, and we educate them, you know. And sometimes the grandma, maybe she doesn't speak good English. But if she listened the talk and she listened that John Paul II was saying the biggest act of love is donate an organ, she will say, oh, really? Then she will give the blessing to one of her sons or daughters or whatever. And they're more, probably they're going to change their mind and say, oh, if grandma said it's okay, then I will do it. You know, then that's why it's so important to bring all the family. And actually, the other thing that is cultural in Hispanics, if you talk with only one Hispanic and you start asking them why you don't consider to be a donor, they will feel very uncomfortable. They just will run away. But they saw a lot of people with them. They feel kind of supportive and they feel better. And then probably they will accept the idea better than if they're alone. Then that's why we're trying to bring all the family, educate, answer all the questions, trying to correct all the misconceptions that they can have about these topics. And we have seen a big response on this community. And we're happy with that, but there's a lot of things that we need to do and improve.
Yeah. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the potential for living donors. And I guess I'm thinking that probably most people, if they think about the issue of organ donation, their scenario will be, say, someone who is maybe injured, very badly injured in an accident.
Right.
And is then declared to be brain dead.
Correct.
But is in a lot of other ways healthy. That is, in a sense, their body is healthy. It continues to function. But they are brain dead. And then it's somebody whose difficult job it is to go to that person's family,
right,
and try to say to them, look, I'm very sorry for your loss, but your family member is, we're keeping the body alive, but they're gone. Now, I know this is a difficult time, but I need to talk to you about the possibility of organ donation. And you try to say to them, it's true that you've lost this person very important to you, but you have the potential now of helping a lot of other people by essentially signing this piece of paper that says, yes, I would allow you to take the organs. So that's the kind of thing that people think about, probably most that kind of situation. I don't know how many people think about the potential, though, for a living, someone who is a living person and who will go on living afterwards to be a donor.
Right. Then it's very interesting what you are saying, and let me address in different ways. Mm-hmm. First of all, let's talk about the deceased donor. In that difficult moment when you are losing somebody, I think it's great to think that your loved one is going to give opportunity to so many people. Mm-hmm. One donor can help until 51 different people, you know, if we count for organs and tissues, you know, if we can help 20 or 30 people and give life to 30 or 20 or 50 people, it's great. And actually, that can help the people to cope this difficult moment. And the other thing that is important to remember is when we're talking about cadaver, that is a hard word. Yeah. If we analyze the etymology of the word, it's a very old word that means the cadaver is kind of the meat for the worms. Then is very hard, you know, if you're thinking, why to feed the worms, you know, when your loved one can give a new option of life to so many people. Your love can live in somebody else, giving life, you know. And then your spirit, your soul, your or whatever you believe is going to move beyond of this plane of life. Then I think when people start thinking about this, said, oh, makes sense. And all the religions are in favor of this. Because some people say, oh, but maybe my religion is against this, or something is going to happen. Mm. But it's not true. In all over the place in the world, and here in U.S., all the religions are in favor of this. Then it's something to think about. It's a very hard moment, and nobody of us wants to be there. But somebody, when they think that can live in somebody else and give that new option of life, because the donor changed the life to somebody else. Somebody else is dying, and they can survive. And today could be somebody else. Tomorrow could be us. Mm-hmm. We never know when we're going to need a transplant. That is one point in deceased donors. In living donors, as we were mentioned before, there's so many people in the waiting list. And there's not enough organs, and they are dying, unfortunately. Then that's why the number of living donors are growing in the recent years, because people realize that. And let's talk about kidney transplantation. I am a strong believer that I think God made us with more than enough. We have two kidneys, but we can survive with one third of one kidney. Then actually one in 700 people born with only one kidney. And if they don't have any other comorbidity or bad habit, they can have a normal life without problem. And we know for more than 50 years that we have been doing kidney transplants, we know that the donors, they don't have problems if they are healthy prior to the donation. And that is very important. That's why the donor needs to be evaluated to make sure they're in the medical condition to be a donor. Not every single patient or person could be a potential living donor. Mm. The first requirement is they need to be healthy, and they need to want to do it, you know. There's no coercion. And then part of the evaluation is to make sure that nobody is pushing them to do it, you know, because it's the boss and you're working for your boss and you need to give the organ, or because you have more power or you have more money or you have, or, and by the way, there's no traffic of organs in U.S. and most of the countries in the world. The organ doesn't have any value, physical value. Has the value is huge, but it's not physical. You can put a number or price to your organ in this moment in U.S. Maybe something is going to change in the future. We don't know. But in this moment, 2008, April 23rd, there is no value according with UNOS and all the regulations.
I guess I can understand it would maybe be a little bit easier if you were trying to persuade, if you said to somebody, well, look, you know, you got two kidneys and you could actually get along with, as long as you're healthy and you stay healthy, you could get along with one. And I could see that it would be maybe easier to make the argument, say, if a close relative of that person needed a kidney there, it was a brother, a sister, a parent, a child, you know, whatever, you could say, well, you could give one of your kidneys to your relative, and they could be well and you could be well, and you know, that would be a good thing. And I could see a lot of people would say, well, yeah, of course I would do that if it was a matter of saving this person's life or maybe improving their life. Well, of course I would do that. I would think it might be a little bit different to try to make the argument that would say to somebody, well, you know, that there are a lot of people who need kidneys, and you really, you know, you could get along with only one. What would you think about just in a sense, just giving up one of your kidneys and saying, whoever's the next person on the list, they can have this one, and I don't know them, and I don't need to know them. I would think that would be a little bit a more difficult kind of thing to persuade somebody to do as sort of an anonymous donation as opposed to one where they know the person who's going to get it, and that's somebody who's close to them.
Right. Very interesting point. Dan, I can tell you 70% of the living donors are relatives or related. That implied that 30% are not related. There are no family members. Mm-hmm. Sometimes their wife, husband, but they're not related, blood related at least. And there's friends, you know. But we are seeing more and more the altruistic donors or the good Samaritans, depending on what your beliefs. But let's call it in the generic way, the altruistic donors. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you recently, for example, in Northwestern, close to 2 weeks or 3 weeks already ago, we did a domino kidney transplant. What is that? We have an altruistic donor. Actually, he wants to donate his kidney to a friend, but unfortunately, his friend couldn't receive the organ. He was too sick, so many medical problems, he couldn't receive the organ. Mm-hmm. But as he made his mind about the donation, he said, okay, but I still want to donate my kidney. And actually, we have three couples of patients that require the transplant. Then we have first couple, recipient one, with that donor one, and actually they were not compatible. We have the second pair where both were not compatible, and the third pair were not compatible. And actually what happened was that the Good Samaritan, or the altruistic donor, gives his kidney to the first recipient. And as the first donor couldn't give it to the first recipient, the first donor gave to the recipient number two. Mm-hmm. And the donor number two that couldn't give it to number two gave to number three. And the donor from recipient number three gave to the first patient on the list. Then actually, that Good Samaritan allow, oh, you know, to do four transplants and three couples who has living donors, but also we transplant one patient on the waiting list. It was a wonderful thing, and he deserved the heaven already for this kind of act. And then that is happening, and I think, as I said, if people become aware, if they understand what is happening, and they appreciate life, there's people that move ahead and do it. Yeah. There is no infrequent that we do a living donor kidney transplant. And actually, we have done also living donor liver transplant from altruistic donors, not related patients. Actually, remember that in Northwestern we did one priest who donate part of his liver to one of his people in the church. And they were not related. They were not friends. Basically, this patient went to talk to him, you know, about all the problems and said, okay. Then at the end, he decided to do it. Mm. And then there's a great people in the world, and it's happening.
We have another caller here. We have about 5 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Dr. Juan Carlos Caicedo. He is a solid organ transplant surgeon. He's director of the Hispanic Transplant Program at Northwestern Memorial Hospital. He's also assistant professor of surgery in the Division of Organ Transplantation at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine, and also is it a children's Memorial that you're also associated with. Mm-hmm. And he's here in Champaign-Urbana to talk about organ donation and transplantation in communities of color. That's a talk that he'll be participating in, taking place at the Carl Forum tonight at 6. That's in the Pollard Auditorium. It's on West Park in Urbana, and I think anyone who would like to attend could do that. Sponsored by the Urbana Health Program, the College of Medicine here on the campus. And we have a couple of callers here, and we'll try to get them in the time that remains. And we'll start with line one in Urbana. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
With blood donation, I know that the current status is men who have sex with men are not able to donate blood. And is that the same with organ donation?
Sometimes are considered high-risk donors. And then part of the things that we need to evaluate is the serologist and make sure that there's no infections like hepatitis C, hepatitis B, HIV. And then depend on the case, we'll consider now depend on the results.
So if someone knows that they're HIV negative, should they still become an organ donor, or should they mark their license in that respect, or is it still going to preclude one from being an organ donor if you fall into that category?
Not necessarily, but it's something that is important to disclose because that will help to assess the risk. And as we mentioned before, so many people are dying. Then actually that's why in this day we're trying to optimize the number of potential donors. And that's why we're assessing all of them and seeing if they're suitable as a donor.
It's a little more open than blood donation, where it's just a blanket restriction and that they look at the other risks present.
Right. Organs. I think the important is to know that information, disclose it, and anyhow,
absolutely.
In any donor, we always investigate or always evaluate if there is any potential infection that can be transmitted with the organs.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And here we'll go to line number two. This is someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. Are you familiar with Dr. Paul A. Byrne, a neonatologist at the clinical professor, as a clinical professor of pediatrics and a fellowship of the Catholic Scholars and past president of the Catholic Medical Association, and his film Continuum of Life?
Actually, no, unfortunately, no.
And it's beyond brain death. Brain death is not truly death. And I would encourage anyone to obtain a life support directive because we need to remember that brain death is not true death. If it's true death, then the organs would not be usable. So I encourage anybody who has any idea of that they want to donate organs, that Dr. Jack Kevorkian was with this man on Crossfire, and they appeared on Good Morning America and the British BBC, and you want to be very careful because you can be considered brain dead, and a woman can still deliver a normal baby, and so the person isn't really dead. So be very careful, and I encourage living transplantation, but I cannot encourage anything as dead transplantation because there isn't such a thing. If the person is dead, they're dead, and the organ will not have had enough oxygen to be a living, viable organ for transplant.
Well, let me clarify that. Actually, it's also very interesting. Then, first of all, in the legal standpoint, in the medical standpoint, in the ethical standpoint, and the religious standpoint, when the patient is brain dead, is dead. There's no doubt about that. And there is very well-defined line that is, I think is important for people to know. Basically, when the patient has a brain dead, that implies that there is a irreversible damage of the brain is not going to recover, and all the organs in the body are going to shut down in any time, in the next minutes or hours following that. But as this patient has a critical injury or the critical lesion, has a lot of medical support, is intubated, and a respirator is helping that patient. But by himself or herself, the patient can breathe. is only because of the ventilator. And also the heart is supported with medication, then it's artificially supported. And then you were right in the point that we want to have the organs perfused before we remove it in order to have a viable organs. But that's why we have to procure the organs as soon as possible before the heart stops and the organs can be damaged. But also, it's important to remember that there's another way to donate organs from deceased donor. It's after cardiac arrest. Then actually in that way, we wait until the heart stops and depend on the protocol that the OPO is following. After some minutes, we can recover that organs and that organs can work too.
Yeah. Well, we're at the point here we're going to have to finish. Maybe I just mention one more time, as we did earlier in the program, that if people are interested in information on organ donation, or if they would like to register to be a donor, you go to the website of the Gift of Hope Organ and Tissue Donor Network, and that's kind of the one for our area here, for our part of the country.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's www.giftofhope.org, and you can get more information there. And as I said, there's a way on that, on the website there, to register as a donor if you would like to do that. And to our guest this morning, I want to say thanks to Dr. Juan Carlos Caicedo. He is director of the Hispanic Transplant Program at Northwestern Memorial Hospital, assistant professor of surgery in the Division of Organ Transplantation at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. Thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure.